everyone. I'm Lindsay Lewis, editor of Building Enclosure. Thanks for listening along with us today. Today, I'm joined by Cynthia Pfeiffer-Krakauer, executive director for the Beverly Willis Architecture Foundation. The foundation has received a significant grant from the National Endowment for the Arts for its work on a series called New Angle, Voice, dedicated to preserving and sharing the impactful lives of the most influential women in the history of architecture and design. Cynthia is here today to talk about the foundation and the essential role for the podcast that it plays in preserving women's histories. Cynthia, thanks for sitting with us.
Thank you, Lindsay.
So let's get started. What about this podcast? I just absolutely love the idea of it. Let's talk New Angle Voice. How did the podcast come to be?
So during the pandemic, while I was working from home, I discovered podcasts, and I'm late to the game, obviously. And I realized that we had a wonderful opportunity to more broadly tell the stories that we have on the website, Pioneering Women of American Architecture, that we had this wonderful resource of scholars and 50 extraordinary women whose biographies are up on the Pioneering Women website. But by virtue of the, you have to go to the site and go through them. And they're scholarly. They're scholarly. And I thought, these are such wonderful stories. And as an architect of a certain age, I saw in the struggles and conflicts that these women had to make their way and to have their careers, a possibility that these stories were way more interesting than just scholarship. And that a younger audience might find the stories actually entertaining. And I would watch my, during the pandemic, I would watch my daughter, you know, running the vacuum cleaner while listening to a podcast. And I just thought, oh gosh, you know, driving around, you can listen to it because you're not visually distracted. And whereas on the website, you can listen to the podcast and follow along with the photographs. The podcast as a standalone seemed like a very interesting medium to explore. And since we weren't having any face-to-face meetings, it seemed to me, and I managed to persuade the board to at least make a pilot episode, which was Julia Morgan. So I didn't know anything at all about podcasts. And neither did anybody else on our board. But Alexandra Lang, who's a member of our board and who has written a number of really wonderful books, one of which is sitting on my desk right now, The Design of Childhood. She's also recently written a book called Meet Me at the Fountain, which is about shopping malls. Anyway, Alexandra put an ad up in her architecture journalists listserv for a podcast producer. So we interviewed remotely a number of different podcast producers, and I hired Brandy Howell, who was in Oakland, and she was so enthusiastic about doing the pilot, which was on Julia Morgan, because she lived in Oakland. And I thought, oh, this is perfect. You know, I'll fly out to California. I'll meet Brandy. We'll go see all these Julia Morgan buildings. And in the meantime, Mills College, where she has, I think, 7 buildings closed, like it ceased to exist. And, you know, the pandemic sort of waxed and waned and travel became more difficult. To make a long story short, it took a good deal of time, maybe 8 months, to make the first episode, which was the Julia Morgan episode.
But wow. 8 months to make the first episode?
Well, between getting the interviews and trying to find the money, you know, finding the money is always.
Yeah, right.
Am I allowed to say that on the air?
Yes.
Finding the money. Yeah, I mean, it was a little bit self-funded in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I had a lot of frequent flyer miles. you can pay for almost anything.
Right. Yeah. Miles. That is so fascinating. So, yeah. Go. Continue, please.
So I didn't really know what to expect with the producer, with Brandy. We sort of bonded over our love of new wave and punk music from the 70s and 80s, which was an interesting thing for us to bond over, but we did. And she's really brilliant and just was able to edit together. I think for Julia Morgan, we interviewed 12 people and we just made the story flow, and you get to hear the Julia Morgan's episode. The interesting story, the interesting human interest story in Julia Morgan's episode is about how Julia Morgan got to be the first female recipient of the AIA gold medal.
Mm-hmm.
In 2015. Up until 2015, no woman, none, zero, not a single woman had received the AIA gold medal. And it had been given for 120 years.
Oh my God. Wow. And, you know, 2015 really wasn't that long ago.
Really not that long ago.
You know. Wow.
No. I mean, if the award started in the pre-Cambrian, you know, I mean, this was, you know, it really took a long time. The dinosaurs were long extinct by the time they gave it to a woman. It was a very interesting inside baseball story.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how'd she get it?
Right.
How did she finally get it? And so that was, you know, I was privy to a little bit of the inside baseball because prior to taking on the Beverly Willis Architecture Foundation, I worked for 10 years as the managing director of the AIA New York chapter that mm-hmm. runs the Center for in New York. And so I knew a little bit of the inside baseball. But still.
So you said you interviewed about 12 people about her story. So I guess my question is, how do you go about researching each subject? What kind of people were you interviewing to talk about her?
Well, first we start with the scholars that were involved with the creation of the profile on the scholarly website. And we ask them, you know, to opine. And then with Julia Morgan, the contemporary story was really the contemporary non-historical story was really the AIA gold medal, really something that I knew about. And so I knew who was involved, and I called the perpetrators who are wonderful. You know, wonderful perpetrators. And we were able to meet with a woman who was just publishing the intimate story of Julia Morgan at Hearst Castle. She was the historian of Hearst Castle for 30 years. you know, kind of more of a popular historian.
Mm-hmm.
Intimate kind of history. And then we We did a little bit of knocking on doors. We went to the what used to be, what was built as the Chinese YWCA in San Francisco in the 1920s by Julia Morgan, is now the home of the Chinese Historical Society in America. And because of the pandemic, everything was closed. Mm-hmm. And so we just walked over there and knocked on the door. And we got really lucky. The executive director was there, and he sat down with us and talked about how this building has achieved a new use. And as this basically a cultural center and a museum, and how it's been repurposed. And it was a very nice, you know, there was a lot of anti-Asian sentiment going around at the time. Mm-hmm. And so it was a really wonderful way to plug into telling other stories through the vehicle of this particular piece of architecture, which was quite wonderful, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, they're wonderful buildings. She was a great architect.
Mm-hmm.
She really was. And, you know, she was an early pioneer in the use of reinforced concrete. She got all this work after the earthquake in 1906 in San Francisco, because one of the buildings that she had done at Mills College did not suffer any damage during the 1906 earthquake.
Mm-hmm.
So people wanted to hire her because their buildings didn't fall down. Also germane to, you know, what's going on in Turkey and Syria right now.
Mm-hmm.
Inadequate reinforcing.
Right.
But, yeah. And what we did was, you know, that story has three parts to it. There's this sort of life story of Julia Morgan and how she went to the École des Beaux-Arts and was the first woman of any nationality to get a certificate in architecture from the École des Beaux-Arts. Quite extraordinary.
Mm-hmm.
She was a doggedly persistent woman. Had some very interesting patrons. You know, the William Randolph Hearst was an extraordinary patron for her. And his mother, also his mother was also her patron, and you know, made it possible for her to establish a career after having graduated from the Ecole. Anyway, it was fascinating.
So,
I learned
so
a lot.
Fascinating, yeah.
I learned a lot. And then the other thing that we do is we try to evoke the time that we're discussing. So we use archival audio. We were not able, unfortunately, with Julia, to find any archival audio of her voice.
Oh.
Which was a shame. We looked at everywhere. You know, even though she was alive, you know, deep into the 20th century, no archival audio that we were able to uncover.
That's so surprising.
Yeah, she was never on Charlie Rose.
Yeah. You think you would get an audio of her, you know, giving a speech or discussing or being interviewed somewhere.
It was very private.
Wow. So, can you tell us about the grant that you received? What does this do for the podcast?
We actually received three grants.
Mm-hmm.
We received one from the National Endowment for the Humanities, and another one from the National Endowment for the Arts. I felt like once we got the one, we wouldn't get the other, but apparently the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing. they had slightly different focuses. And we got a grant from the Graham Foundation for the Arts. And what that enables us to do is it enables us to make much better use of archival resources that frequently we have to pay for, that are not free to use. It enables us to travel to archives and scope out these wonderful resources, oral histories stashed away on, you know, little cassette tapes. Your audience might be too young to remember cassette tapes, but
yeah, we're not. If I know what they are, believe me, my audience knows what they are.
And, you know, and we do a lot of detective work, because one of the things that I'm really interested in, both as an architect and as a mother, is what was the effect of these pioneering women's careers on their children?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because when you tell a story about identity, they're women, right? That's part of their identity.
Mm-hmm.
Being a mother is also, you know, can't really be separated out. Once you've taken that step, you know, you can't really undo it mm-hmm. too much. And as a woman who worked basically all of her adult life and had two children, I know that I was frequently torn
mm-hmm.
in my responsibilities to my children.
Absolutely.
And my desire to excel in my chosen career.
Right.
And I wondered, I thought that was my private agony.
Mm.
What you mm-hmm. find out, what you find out is that many women choose not to have, many women, it's, I don't know whether it's particularly in architecture, but many women that we look at do not have children, mm-hmm. no children, but some of them do. And we try to find the children. That's my investigative reporter kind of antenna going. We find the children and we interview the children.
I love that.
So the first one that we were able to like find a child, and these children are my age, you know, mm-hmm. so they're not like, we're not talking to toddlers here.
Right.
Natalie DeBlois had four boys who range in age from, I guess the first boy was born in 45 or 46, and the youngest one in 58. So, you know, they're kind of middle-aged people now, baby boomers,
mm-hmm.
they're baby boomers. And we reached out to each one and actually interviewed one of the boys, the second oldest boy, Robert, at Iowa Public Radio. And it was really extraordinary to hear his love and admiration for his mother and her achievements.
Mm-hmm.
He did not appreciate as a child, you know, when he was, you know, being taken care of by people other than his parents.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very interesting. He had some very interesting stories to tell about, you know, how much of his childhood was unsupervised. You know, of course, it was a different time.
Right.
But he tells this one amazing story about being on the, I guess, the Chicago boat tour or something. And somebody says, oh, look at that building. Isn't that really amazing? And then he turns around and he says, that building was designed by my mother. You know, and that moment of kind of owning not only, you know, his troubled childhood, but also owning the triumph of his mother was quite meaningful. And you can hear it in his voice.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that I've really grown to love about the podcast is when you read a transcript of an interview. You can't hear the emotion in the voice, but when you listen to the story, you can hear the intensity and the pride and, you know, just a whole range of emotions that these kids have for their architect mothers.
Right. Yeah. No, it brings her to life in a way, because it's more than just facts. It's people who knew her and loved her as a personal life and even as a professional life. And they're talking about her achievements and the kind of woman she was, and not just, you know, buildings that she built. It was just a story behind her, which makes her human. So it's beautiful.
And with Natalie, we were very lucky because we had some truly wonderful archival audio for Natalie. And, you know, that's really the, you know, that's the vein of gold. And so we're really looking forward to, you know, our first episode in the second season is going to be Ray Eames. And we've gone through, I think, about 20 hours of archival audio of Ray. And,
wow,
you know, at various points in her career. I mean, the Eames folks were very good. Charles and Ray were very good at documenting their process and, you know, leaving a trail of breadcrumbs. You know, because they were very much multimedia, not just architects, very much designers.
Well, speaking of season two, when does the new season drop? Obviously, season one is already out for anyone that wants to listen. I'm sure everyone listening is already hooked on the podcast and will be going to find it as soon as possible. But can you tell us about season two? When does it come out, and what can we look forward to for the entire season?
So season two, episode one is Ray Eames, and that is going to drop on March 8th, which is International Women's Day.
Yes.
March 8th. And then through the rest of the month, you know, we'll sprinkle the other four episodes. So Ray is going to drop on March 8th. The next episode, and this is another one of these situations that's just so mind-boggling. The next episode is about Jean Fletcher and Sarah Harkness, who were the two women that were married to the two founding partners. All four of them were founding partners in 1947 of the Architects Collaborative, with two other people. Very successful Cambridge practice, along with Walter Gropius, whose name everyone would recognize, who was sort of the figurehead. Also considered a founding partner, but really it was these kids, the Harknesses and the Fletchers, who got together. They won a competition. And these two married couples won this competition. One came in first, and the other married couple came in second. And for a dormitory project, I think it's Smith College. And they decided that they would go into business together. One of them was working for SOM, another one was working for Saarinen. Anyway, took another couple partners, Ben Thompson, who was there for a while, and Walter Gropius, and lived this kind of utopian communal lifestyle as both firms and families. First in a house in Cambridge, so that they could share the childcare and share the professional responsibilities at the office, because they were architects, they were licensed, they were full partners. Between these two families, there were 13 children.
Oh my goodness.
Six from the Fletchers and seven from the Harknesses. And I just thought that just blew my mind. And so because it blew my mind, I said, we have to get to the bottom of this. We got to find out what was going on there. And so we're in touch with a number of the children there since there are so many. So that's the second one. So that's a twofer episode.
Yeah. Oh, I can't wait to hear that one.
Well, what I always say to people when they ask me about the podcast, I say, well, it's all this like really wonderful new scholarship and, this, being willing to sort of reach out to the children and exploring the social aspects of their mother's practices, et cetera, very interesting, very innovative, subject matter, actually. But sometimes it's a little bit more like TMZ. Do you know what I mean?
I absolutely do.
We find out who was sleeping with who, there was a lot of like, there was a lot of misbehavior. There was a lot of misbehavior in these architects' offices. And,
Now, I
I
wish I
mean,
could say
and
I was surprised, but I just that, yeah,
you
that makes
would, I
sense.
think what honestly, what has surprised me is how pervasive it is. That actually surprised me and kind of, it was slightly disheartening. And anyway, so we get all these gossipy stories, which we don't really pay too much attention to them. But that too is a part of the challenge that women like Ray Eames, whose husband Charles was a notorious womanizer, with women in the office, to the extent that Ray's office was this little bunker with no windows into the rest of the office. She didn't want to watch it.
Jeez.
And yeah, stuff like that. I mean, it's like we don't say that.
Right.
We're at part out, but we find out a lot of stuff and similar things. Jean Fletcher passed away when she was only 56, leaving six children, some of whom were very young. But Chip Harkness went on for years and years and years, and had an open relationship apparently with a number of other women, sort of that Sally Harkness just chose not to deal with. When you think about the challenges to success in a career can be not just challenges that have a technical component, but emotional challenges. Having children is an emotional challenge to your career, and having wayward husbands is an emotional challenge to your career. And so these women that were able to achieve at such a high level overcame not only the sort of systemic sexism of their time, but also very serious family challenges that, in my mind, makes their achievement even more significant. The third episode is on Amasa Lee Meredith, who was an African American architect, although she was never licensed because during the Jim Crow, she was in Virginia, during Jim Crow, black women could not be licensed architects. But she practiced as an architect. She had an open relationship with her companion, Edna Colson, who was also African-American. They lived together on the campus of Virginia State University quite openly. Mm-hmm. And which was pretty extraordinary for like the 40s and 50s. Mm-hmm. And she created a syndicate, a real estate development syndicate that created Azurest North, which is a seaside resort in Sag Harbor on Long Island, and that was advertised to their friends and colleagues as an African-American seaside resort. It's quite wonderful. And the community is still there, and
wow,
they're fighting hard to preserve themselves. It's called Azurest North.
Wow.
And it's still there, still thriving, actually. Still thriving.
I am so excited to hear these women come to life and to hear the new season of the podcast. Thank you again, Cynthia, for your time today. It has been such a joy talking to you and hearing even just snippets of these remarkable women.
Well, thank you for the opportunity.
If anyone listening has any questions, please feel free to reach out to myself or Cynthia. We'd love to continue the conversation. Until next time, visit us on buildingenclosureonline.com for all your technical and educational resources.